Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I'm reading to you today from Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Iliad, and today we are in Book 7. So speaking, Hector the Glorious swept on through the gates, and with him went Alexandrus, Paris, his brother, both of them minded in their hearts to do battle and take their part in the fighting. And what was it like? And, as to men of the sea in their supplication of the god, sends a fair wind, when they were breaking their strength at the smooth oar sweeps, driving over the sea, and their arms are weak with weariness, so these two appeared to the Trojans, who had longed for them. Each killed his man, Paris, the son of Lord Erythaeus, Menestheus, who lived in Arne, born to him of the war club Erythaeus, and to ox-eyed Polymedosa, while Hector, with the sharp spear, stuck Aeoneus under the circle of the bronze helm in the neck and broke his limbs' strength. And Glaucus, lord of the Lycian men, the son of Hippolochus, struck down with the spear Iphonous in the strong encounter, Dexius's son, as he leapt up behind his fast horses, striking him in the shoulder. He dropped from his chariot to the ground, and his limbs' strength was broken. Now, as the goddess gray-eyed Athena was aware of these two, destroying the men of Argos in the saint's strong encounter, she went down in a flash of speed from the peaks of Olympus to sacred Ilion, Troy, where Apollo stirred forth to meet her from his seat on Pergamus, where he planned that the Trojans should conquer. These two then encountered each other beside the oak tree, so Apollo and Athena run into each other. And speaking first, the son of Zeus, Lord Apollo, addressed her. Apollo speaking to Athena. What can be your desire this time, O daughter of great Zeus, that you came down from Olympus at the urge of your mighty spirit? To give the Danaans victory in the battle, turning it back, since you have no pity at all for the Trojans who are dying? But if you might only do as I say, it would be far better. For this day, let us put an end to the hatred and the fighting now. They shall fight again hereafter, till we witness the finish they make of Ilion, since it is dear to the heart of you, who are goddess immortal, that this city shall be made desolate. So Apollo's on the side of the Trojans, Athena on the side of the Greeks, and they decide, let's make a truce. Line 33. Then in answer, the goddess gray-eyed Athena spoke to him, so Athena speaking to Apollo. A worker from afar, thus let it be. These were my thoughts also, as I came down from Olympus among the Achaeans and Trojans. Tell me then, how are you minded to stop these men in their fighting? So they are going to stop the fighting. Now in turn, the son of Zeus, Lord Apollo, addressed her. Let us rouse up the strong heart in Hector, breaker of horses, if he might call forth some Danaan to do battle against him, single man against single man in bitter combat. And let the strong-grieved Achaeans, stirred into admiration, send forth a single man to do battle with brilliant Hector. He spoke, nor failed to persuade the goddess gray-eyed Athena. Now Helenus, Priam's beloved son, and Helenus is a seer, he's a prophet, and he's going to speak to Hector. Now Helenus, Priam's beloved son, gathered into his heart their deliberation, and all that pleased the musing divinities. He went on his way and stood beside Hector and spoke a word to him. Hector, O son of Priam and equal of Zeus in council, would you now be persuaded by me, for I am your brother? Might the rest of the Trojans sit down, and all the Achaeans, and yourself call forth one of the Achaeans, their bravest, to fight man to man against you in bitter combat, since it is not your destiny yet to die and encounter fate. So Hector now has the same idea given to him from his brother that Athena and Apollo have devised. For thus I heard it in the speech of the gods everlasting. So Helenus says, as a seer, as a prophet, he heard the gods talking about that. So he gives the same idea to his brother Hector. Line 54. So he spoke, and Hector, hearing his word, was happy, and went into the space between and forced back the Trojan battalions, holding his spear by the middle until they were all seated. This is Hector walking right out into the battle and stopping the fighting, holding a spear in the middle, like a bar. Holding his spear by the middle until they were all seated, while Agamemnon in turn seated the strong-grieved Achaeans, and Athena and the lord of the silver bow Apollo, assuming the likeness of birds, of vultures, settled aloft the great oak tree of their father, Zeus of the Aegis, taking their ease and watching these men, whose ranks dense settled, shuddered into a bristle of spears, of shields, and of helmets. So Athena and Apollo are disguised as birds, as vultures, sitting on a tree to eavesdrop. And we have now another extended simile, ring composition. What was it like as they all sat down? As when the shudder of the west wind, suddenly rising, scatters across the water, and the water darkens beneath it, so darkening were settled the ranks of Achaeans and Trojans in the plain. And now Hector spoke forth between them. Listen to me, you Trojans and strong-grieved Achaeans, while I speak forth what the heart within my breast, Zeus, urges. Son of Cronos, who sits on high, would not bring to fulfillment our oaths, but is found to be of evil intention toward both sides, until that day when you storm Troy of the strong towers, or that day when you yourselves are broken beside your seafaring vessels. Seeing now that among you are the bravest of all the Achaeans, let one of you, whose heart stirs him to combat against me, stand forth before all to fight by himself against brilliant Hector. Behold the terms that I make. Let Zeus be witness upon them. If with the thin edge of the bronze he takes my life, then let him strip my armor and carry it back to the hollow ships, but give my body to be taken home again, so that the Trojans and the wives of the Trojans may give me in death my right of burning. But if I take his life, and Apollo grants me the glory, the Kleos, I will strip his armor and carry it to sacred Ilion, and hang it in front of the temple of far-striking Apollo. But his corpse I will give back among the strong-benched vessels, so that the flowing-haired Achaeans may give him due burial, and heap up a mound upon him beside the broad passage of Hela. And some day one of the men will say, as he sees it, one who in his benched ship sails on the wine-blue water, this is the mound of a man who died long ago in battle, who was one of the bravest, and glorious Hector killed him. So he will speak one day, and my glory will not be forgotten, my Kleos, this is Hector. So he spoke, and all of them stayed stricken to silence in shame of refusing him, and in fear to take up his challenge. But now, at long last, Menelaus stood forth and addressed them in scorn and reproach, and stirred within the heart to great sorrow. Ah, me, you brave in words, you women, not men of Achaea, this will be a defilement upon us, shame upon shame piled, if no one of the Danaans goes out to face Hector, because no one has stood up. Now, no, may all of you turn to water and earth, all of you who sit by yourselves with no life in you, utterly dishonored. This is Atime, a loss of Time, line 101. I myself will arm against this man, while above us the threads of victory are held in the hands of the immortals. So he spoke, and began to put on his splendid armor. And there, O Menelaus, would have shown forth the end of your life under the hands of Hector, since he was far stronger than you were, had not the kings of the Achaeans leapt up and caught you, and the son of Atreus himself, powerful Agamemnon, caught you by the right hand and called you by name and spoke to you. Menelaus, Agamemnon says, beloved of God, you are mad. You have no need to take leave of your senses thus. Hold fast, though it hurts you, nor long in your pride to fight with a man who is better than you are, with Hector, Priam's son. There are others who shudder before him, even Achilles in the fighting where men win glory, Kleos, trembles to meet this man, and he is far better than you are. Go back now and sit down in the throng of your own companions. The Achaeans will set up another to fight against this man, and even though he is without fear and can never be glutted with rough work, I think he will be glad to leave off, even if he comes off whole from the hateful fighting and bitter combat. The hero spoke like this, and bent the heart of his brother, since he urged wisely. And Menelaus obeyed him. His henchmen joyfully thereupon took off the armor from his shoulders. Nestor the Wise, among the Argives, now stood forth and addressed them. Oh, for shame! Great sorrow settles on the land of Achaea. Surely he would groan aloud. Peleus, the aged horseman, the great man of counsel among the Myrmidons, and their speaker. Once, as he questioned me in his house, he was filled with great joy as he heard the generation and blood of all the Argives. Now, if he were to hear how all cringe away before Hector, many a time he would lift up his very hands to the immortals, and the life breath from his limbs would go down into the house of Hades. In other words, Nestor says, if Peleus could hear this, he would turn over in his grave. Line 132. If only, and this is Nestor's if only speech from lines 132 to 156. If only I were young again, would be like this one day when I won everything, if only I were young again. If only, O Father Zeus, Athena, Apollo, I were in my youth, as when the Pelians assembled, and the spear-fighting Arcadians battled by swirling Caladan, by the streams of the Ardennes, and before the ramparts of Phaea, their champion stood forth, Eurylochian, a man godlike, wearing upon his shoulders the armor of Lord Erythaeus, Erythaeus the Brilliant, given by the men of that time and the fair-girdled women the name Club Fighter, because he went into battle armed neither with the bow nor the long spear, but with a great bar clubbed of iron broke the battalions. Lycurgus killed this man by craft, not strength, so he wasn't killed because someone was stronger, he was killed because somebody tricked him, for he met upon in the narrow pass of the way, where the iron club served not to parry destruction, for Lycurgus, too quick, with a stab beneath it, pinned him through the middle with the spear, so he went down backward to the ground, and he stripped the armor brazen Ares had given him, and wore the armor thereafter himself through the grind of battle. But when Lycurgus was grown an old man in his halls, he gave it to his beloved henchman Eurylochian to carry. Wearing this armor, he called forth all the bravest to fight him. But they were all afraid and trembling, none had the courage, only I. For my hard-enduring heart in its daring drove me to fight him. I, in age, was the youngest of all of them, and I fought with him, and Pallas Athena gave me the glory, the Kleos. Of all the men I have killed, this was the tallest and strongest, for he sprawled in his great bulk this way and that way. And this is the end of Nestor's, if only I were young again, I would fight like this other story that he just repeated. Line 156. If only I were young now as then, and the strength still steady within me, Hector of the glancing helm would soon find his battle. But you now, who are the bravest of all the Achaeans, are not minded with a good will to go against Hector. So the old man scolded them, and nine in all stood forth. Far the first to rise up was the lord of men, Agamemnon, and rose after him the son of Tydeus, strong Diomedes. And next the two Iontes rose, Ajax and Ajax, their fierce strength upon them, and after these Idomeneus, and Idomeneus's companion Meriones, a match for the murderous lord of battles. And after these Eurypylos, the glorious son of Eumaeon, and Thoas rose up, Andraemon's son, and brilliant Odysseus. So these nine men stood up. All of these were willing to fight against brilliant Hector. Now before them again spoke the Gerenian horseman Nestor. Let the lot be shaken for all of you to see who wins it. He shall be the one to gladden the strong grieved Achaeans, and to be glad within his own heart if he can come off whole again from the hateful battle and bitter combat. So he spoke, and each of them marked a lot as his own lot. They threw them in the helmet of Atreus' son Agamemnon, and the people, holding up their hands to the gods, prayed to them. They would murmur any man, gazing into the wide sky, Father Zeus, let Aeos win the lot, or else Diomedes, Tydeus' son, or the king himself of golden Mycenae, and this is Mycenae, Agamemnon is the king of Mycenae. So they spoke, and Nestor the Geranian horseman shook the lots, and a lot leapt from the helmet, the one that they had all wished for, the lot of Aias. This is Telamonian Aias. And a herald carrying it all through the great throng showed it from left to right to the great men of the Achaeans. So a herald has this lot that has been marked, and he's showing it to each of these nine great men to see which one will say, that's my lot. All of them. Each man knew not the mark and denied it, but as carrying it through the great throng, he showed it to that one who had marked it as his and thrown it in the helmet, glorious Aias. He held forth his hand, and the herald stood by him and put the lot in it, and he saw his mark on the lot and knew it, and his heart was gladdened. He threw it down on the ground beside his foot and spoke to them. See, friends, the lot is mine. This is Aias speaking. And I myself am made happy in my heart, since I think I can win over brilliant Hector. Do this then, while I put on my armor of fighting, all of you be praying to the Lord Zeus, the son of Cronos, in silence, and each to himself, Let none of the Trojans hear you, or openly out loud, since we have nothing to be afraid of at all, since no man by force will beat me backward, unwilling as he wills, nor by craft either, since I think that the man who was born and raised in Salamis, myself, is not such a novice. So he spoke, and they prayed to the Lord Zeus, the son of Cronos, and then would murmur any man, gazing into the wide sky, Father Zeus, watching over us from Ida, most high, most honored, grant that Aias win the vaunt of renown and the victory. But if truly you love Hector and are careful for him, give to both of them equal strength, make equal their honor. So either make Aias win, or let them both win and have it be a draw. So they spoke, and meanwhile Aias armed him in shining bronze. Then, when he had girt his body and all its armor, he strode on his way. And what was it like when Aias strode on his way? As Ares, the war god, walks gigantic, going into the fighting of men whom the son of Cronos has driven to fight angrily in heart-perishing hatred, such was Aias as he strode gigantic, the wall of the Achaeans, smiling under his threatening brows, with his feet beneath him, taking huge strides forward and shaking the spear shaft shadowing. And the Argives looking upon him were made glad, while the Trojans were taken every man in the knees with trembling and terror, and for Hector himself the heart beat hard in his breast. But he could not any more find means to take flight and shrink back into the throng of his men, since he in his pride had called him to battle. Now Aias came near him, carrying like a wall his shield of bronze and sevenfold oxhide, which Tychius wrought him with much toil. This Mycenaean body shield is absolutely huge. It's better described in Book 15, beginning line 645. What was the shield like? Tychius, at home in Hyle, far the best of all workers in leather, who had made him the great gleaming shield of sevenfold oxhide from strong bulls, and hammered an eighth fold of bronze upon it. Telamonian Aias, carrying this to cover his chest, came near to Hector and spoke to him in words of menace. So now Aias is going to vaunt to Hector. Hector, single man against single man, you will learn now for sure what the bravest men are like among the Danaans, even after Achilles the lion-hearted who breaks men in battle. He lies now apart among his own beaked seafaring ships in anger at Agamemnon, the shepherd of the people. But here we are, and we are such men as can stand up against you. There are plenty of us, so now begin your fight and your combat. Tall Hector of the glancing helm answered him, Aias, now Hector is going to vaunt, Aias, son of Telamon, seed of Zeus, O lord of the people, do not be testing me as if I were some ineffectual boy or a woman who knows nothing of the works of warfare. I know well myself how to fight and kill men in battle. I know how to turn to the right, how to turn to the left, the oxhide tanned into a shield, which is my protection in battle. I know how to storm my way into the struggle of flying horses. I know how to tread my measure on the grim floor of the war god. You, great as you are, I would not strike you by stealth, watching for my chance, but openly so, if perhaps I might hit you. So he spoke, and balanced the spear far-shadowed, and threw it, and struck the sevenfold oxhide terrible shield of Aias in the uttermost bronze, which was the eighth layer upon it, and the unwearying bronze spearhead shore its way through six folds, but was stopped in the seventh oxhide. So there are seven layers of oxhide and one of brass, and it went almost all the way through. Then after him Aias the illustrious, in turn cast with his spear far-shadowing, and struck the shield of Priam's son on its perfect circle. Line 251. All the way through the glittering shield went the heavy spearhead, and crashed its way through the intricately worked corslet. Straight ahead by the flank, the spearhead shore through his tunic, and yet he bent away to one side and avoided the dark death. Both now gripping in their hands the long spears, pulled them out, and went at each other like lions who live on raw meat, or wild boars whose strength is no light thing. The son of Priam stabbed then with his spear into the shield's center, nor did the bronze point break its way through, but the spear had bent back. Now Aias, plunging upon him, thrust at the shield, and the spearhead passed clean through, and pounded Hector back in his fury, and tore at his neck passing, so that the dark blood broke. Yet even so Hector of the shining helmet did not stop fighting, but gave back, and in his heavy hand caught up a stone that lay on the plain, black and rugged and huge. With this he struck the sevenfold oxhide, terrible shield of Aias, in the knob of the center, so that the bronze clashed loud about it. After him Aias, in turn, lifting a stone far greater, whirled it and threw, leaning into the cast his strength beyond measure, and the shield broke inward under the stroke of the rock like a millstone, and Hector's very knees gave, so that he sprawled backward, shield beaten upon him. But at once Apollo lifted him upright, and now they would have been stabbing with their swords at close quarters, had not the heralds, messengers of Zeus and of mortals, come up, one for the bronze-armored Achaeans, one for the Trojans, Idaeus and Tilybius, both men of good counsel. They held their staves between the two men, so they're stopping the fight. And the herald Idaeus, out of his knowledge of prudent advices, spoke a word to them. Stop the fight, dear children, nor go on with this battle. To Zeus, who gathers the clouds, both of you are beloved, and both of you are fighters. This thing all of us know, surely. Night darkens now. It is a good thing to give way to the night time. So these messengers say, the gods love both of you. Why don't you stop fighting for tonight? Aias, the son of Telamon, spoke to him in answer. Bid Hector answer this, Idaeus, since it was he who in his pride called forth all our bravest to fight him. Let him speak first, and I, for my part, shall do as he urges. Tall Hector of the glancing helm answered him. Aias, seeing that God has given you strength, stature, and wisdom also, and with the spear you surpass the other Achaeans, let us now give over this fighting and hostility for today. We shall fight again until the divinity chooses between us and gives victory to one or the other. So civilized people, they're going to stop for the night, stop fighting for the night. Line 294. 3. Night darkens now. It is a good thing to give way in the night time. Thus you may bring joy to all the Achaeans beside their ships, and above all to those who are of your own kindred and company. And I, in the great city of Lord Priam, will gladden the Trojans, and the women of Troy with their trailing robes, who will go before the divine assembly in thanksgiving for my sake. Come, then, let us give each other glorious presents, so that any of the Achaeans or Trojans may say of us, these two fought each other in heart-consuming hate, then joined with each other in close friendship before they were parted. Now we see that Hector and Aias are, because they are civilized people, and they are going to practice xenia, this guest-host relationship, and they are going to part like gentlemen and exchange gifts. So he spoke, and bringing a sword with nails of silver gave it to him, together with the sheath and the well-cut sword belt. And Aias gave a war belt, colored, shining with purple. So, separating, Aias went among the Achaean people, and Hector went back to the thronging Trojans, who were made happy when they saw him coming alive and unwounded out of the combat, escaping the strength and the unconquerable hands of Aias, and they, who had not hoped to see him alive, escorted him back to the town. On the other side, the strong, grieved Achaeans led Aias, happy in his victory, to great Agamemnon. When these had come to shelters of the sons of Atreus, Agamemnon, the lord of men, dedicated an ox among them, a five-year-old male, to Zeus, all-powerful son of Cronos. They skinned the victim and put it in order and butchered the carcass, and cut up the meat expertly into small pieces, and spitted them, and roasted all carefully and took off the pieces. Then, after they had finished the work and got the feast ready, they feasted. Nor was any man's hunger denied a fair portion, and Atreus's son, the hero wide-ruling Agamemnon, gave to Aias in honor the long cuts of the chine's portion. But when they had put away their desire for eating and drinking, the aged man began to weave his counsel before them. First, Nestor, whose advice had shone best before this. He, in kind intentions toward all, stood forth and addressed them. So this is Nestor's wise counsel, line 327. Son of Atreus, and you other great men of all the Achaeans, seeing that many flowing-haired Achaeans have died here, whose dark blood has been scattered beside the fair waters of Scamandrus by the fierce war god, while their souls went down into the house of Hades, therefore, with the dawn, we should set a pause to the fighting of Achaeans, and assembling them, wheel back the bodies with mules and oxen. Then must we burn them a little apart from the ships, so that each whose duty it is may carry the bones back to a man's children when we go home to the land of our fathers. So Nestor is advising that they take a break in the war to burn their dead and store the bones. Line 336. And let us gather and pile one single mound on the corpse pyre indiscriminately from the plain, and build fast upon it towered ramparts to be a defense of ourselves and our vessels. So Nestor's plan has furtherance here. Nestor wants to not only burn all of these corpses, but also he wants to build a huge mound there, a type of funeral mound, and then they'll make it into a fort by defense with towered ramparts. And let us build into these walls gates strongly fitted, that there may be a way through them for the driving of horses, and on the outer side and close we must dig a deep ditch, circling it so as to keep off their people and horses, that we may not be crushed under the attack of these proud Trojans. So he spoke, and all the kings gave him their approval. Now there was an assembly of Trojans high on the city of Ilion, so now we're going to Troy, fiercely shaken to tumult before the doors of Priam, and among these Antenor the Thoughtful began to address them. Trojans and Dardanians and companions in arms, hear me while I speak forth what the heart within my breast urges. Come then, let us give back Helen of Argos and all her possessions to the sons of Atreus to take away. See, now we fight with our true pledges made into lies, and I see no good things accomplished for us in the end unless we do this. He spoke thus, and sat down again, and among them rose up brilliant Alexandrus, Paris, the lord of lovely-haired Helen, who spoke to him in answer and addressed them in winged words. Antenor, these things that you argue please me no longer. Your mind knows how to contrive a saying better than this one. But if in all seriousness this is your true argument, then it is the very gods who ruined the brain within you. I will speak out before the Trojans, breaker of horses. I refuse. This is Paris Alexander. I refuse, straight out. I will not give back the woman. But of the possessions I carried away to our house from Argos, I am willing to give all back and to add to these for my own goods. And now we learn that perhaps Paris Alexander took more than just Helen. He thus spoke and sat down again, and among them rose up Priam, son of Dardanus, equal of the gods in council, who in kind intention toward all stood forth and addressed them. Trojans and Dardanians and companions in arms, hear me while I speak forth what the heart within my breast urges. Take now your supper about the city, as you did before this, and remember your duty of the watch, and be each man wakeful. And at dawn let Aetius go to the hollow ships and speak with the sons of Atreus, Menelaus, and Agamemnon, giving the words of Alexandrus, for whose sake this strife has risen, and to add this solid message, and ask them if they are willing to stop the sorrowful fighting until we can burn the bodies of our dead. We shall fight again until the divinity chooses between us and gives victory to one or the other. So he spoke, and they listened to him with care and obeyed him, and so took their supper, watch succeeding watch, through the army. Then at dawn, Aetius went down to the hollow ships, so they're sending a messenger, where he found the Danaans, henchmen of the war god, in assembly beside the stern of Agamemnon's ship. The herald, with the great voice, took his stand in their midst and spoke to them. Son of Atreus, and you other great men of all the Achaeans, Priam and the rest of the haughty Trojans have bidden me give you, if this message be found to your pleasure and liking, the word of Alexandrus, for whose sake this strife has arisen. All the possessions that Alexandrus carried in his hollow ships to Troy, and I wish that he had perished before then, he is willing to give all back, and to add to these from his own goods. But the very wedded wife of glorious Menelaus, he says that he will not give, though the Trojans would have him do it. They told me to give you this message also, if you are willing, to stop the sorrowful fighting until we can burn the bodies of our dead. We shall fight again afterwards until the divinity chooses between us and gives victory to one or the other. So he spoke, and all of them stayed quiet in silence. And it's interesting that Paris says the same thing that Agamemnon had said. Agamemnon had told Chryseis the same thing, I won't give back the girl. And then to Achilles, I will not give back the woman. Very interesting. Line 398. So he spoke, and all of them stayed quiet in silence. But now, at long last, Diomedes of the great war cry addressed them. Let none accept the possessions of Alexandrus, nor take back Helen. One who is very simple can see it, that by this time the terms of death hang over the Trojans. So he spoke, and all sons of the Achaeans shouted acclaim for the word of Diomedes, breaker of horses. And now powerful Agamemnon spoke to Idias. Idias, for you hear for yourself the word of the Achaeans, how they are answering you, and such is my pleasure also. But about the burning of the dead bodies I do not begrudge you. No, for there is no sparing time for the bodies of the perished, once they have died, to give them swiftly the pity of burning. Let Zeus, high-thundering lord of Hera, witness our pledges. He spoke, and held up the scepter in the sight of all the gods. Then Idias made his way back once more to sacred Ilion, to Troy. The Trojans and Dardanians were in sessions of assembly, all gathered in one place, awaiting Idias when he might come back. And he returned to them and delivered his message, standing there in their midst. And they made their swift preparations for two things, some to gather the bodies, and the others firewood, while the Argives on the other side, from their strong benched vessels, went forward, some to gather the bodies, and others firewood. Now the sun of a new day struck on the ploughlands, rising out of the quiet water and the deep stream of the ocean to climb the sky. The Trojans assembled together. They found it hard to recognize each individual dead man, but with water they washed away the blood that was on them, and as they wept warm tears, they lifted them onto the wagons. But great Priam would not let them cry out, and in silence they piled the bodies upon the pyre with their hearts in sorrow, and burned them upon the fire, and went back to sacred Ilion. In the same way on the other side, the strong grieved Achaeans, the Greeks, piled their own slain upon the pyre with their hearts in sorrow, and burned them upon the fire, and went back to their hollow vessels. But when the dawn was not yet, but still the pallor of night's edge, a chosen body of the Achaeans formed by the pyre, and they gathered together and piled one single mound all above it indiscriminately from the plain, and built a fort on it with towered ramparts to be a defense for themselves and their vessels. So the Trojans burned their dead, went back to Troy, and the Greeks burned their dead, and went back to the ships, but then a small group of them, before daylight, came back and made this mound, and they're building a fort on it, with towered ramparts, to be a defense for themselves and their vessels. And they built within these walls gates strongly fitted, that there might be a way through them for the driving of horses. And on the outer side and against it, they dug a deep ditch, making it great and wide, and fixed the sharp stakes inside it. So they've built this huge rampart, this huge hill defense, and they put gates in it so they can get out with their horses. But anyone coming through, now they have a ditch around it, and they have stakes in the ditch so that if someone tries to cross coming the other direction, they would not be able to drive horses across with it. They would have to stop and walk through and couldn't take a chariot or a horse. Making it great and wide, fixed the sharp stakes inside it. Line 443. 2, 4, 4, 2. So the flowing-haired Achaeans labored, and meanwhile the gods in session, so now we're back at Olympus with the gods in session at the side of Zeus, who handles the lightning, watched the huge endeavor of the bronze-armored Achaeans. And the god Poseidon, who shakes the earth, began speaking among them. So the gods of Olympus are having counsel, and Poseidon says to Zeus, Father Zeus, is there any mortal left on the wide earth who will still declare to the immortals his mind and purpose? So Poseidon's very frustrated. Do you not see how now these flowing-haired Achaeans have built a wall landward of their ships and driven about it a ditch and have not given to the gods any grand sacrifice? Normally, if you had a huge building project like this, the first thing that a pious Greek or Trojan would do would be to make an offering to the gods first. And the Greeks did not do this, and Poseidon is very, very upset. Line 451. Now the fame of this will last as long as dawnlight is scattered, and men will forget that wall which I and Phoebus Apollo built with our hard work for the hero Laomedon's city. Those are the walls of Troy, built by Apollo and Poseidon. Deeply troubled, Zeus, who gathers the clouds, answered him, What a thing to have said, earth-shaker of the wide strength! Some other one of the gods might fear such a thought, one who is a god far weaker of his hands and in anger than you are, but the fame of you shall last as long as dawnlight is scattered. Come, then, after once more the flowing-haired Achaeans are gone back with their ships to the beloved land of their fathers, break their wall to pieces and scatter it into the salt sea, and pile again the beach deep under the sands and cover it. So let the great wall of the Achaeans go down to destruction. So Zeus says, okay, once the Greeks are gone, you can just wash this wall away so they don't get any fame for it, since they didn't give you, ask you first. Line 464. As these two were talking thus together, the sun went down, and the work of the Achaeans was finished. They slaughtered oxen beside their shelters and took their supper. The ships came over to them from Lemnos, bringing them wine, ships sent over to them in numbers by the son of Jason, Eunius, whom Hypsipyle had borne to the shepherd of the people, Jason. Apart to the sons of Atreus, Agamemnon and Menelaus, Jason's son had given wine as a gift, 1,000 measures, and hence the rest of the flowing-haired Achaeans bought wine, some for bronze and others for shining iron, some for skins and some for the whole oxen, while others paid slaves taken in war, and they made their feasting abundant. So wine is available, and they pay for it with whatever they have, whether it's slaves or bronze. All night long thereafter the flowing-haired Achaeans feasted, and the Trojans and their companions in arms in the city. But all night long Zeus of the councils was threatening evil upon them in the terrible thunderstroke. So there's a thunderstorm going on. Green fear took hold of them. They spilled the wine on the ground from their cups, and none was so hardy as to drink till he had poured to the all-powerful son of Cronos. They lay down thereafter and took the blessing of slumber. This is the end of Book 7, and we see that Zeus was mad at them for not making sacrifice before building the fort and the gates and the stakes in the ditch. And so he's made a thunderstorm come, and as they're trying to drink all this wine they have, they now are so frightened they actually pour out a little bit as a libation. They spill some of the ground of the wine on the ground from their cups. That's a libation. And none was so hardy. Nobody drank until they'd offered some to Zeus. And that's the end of Book 7.